Episode 98 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded September 7th, 2016.
Behind the scenes of the ATX Television Festival, which happens every June in Austin, Texas, which the TV Dudes have attended every year.
An interview. Conducted by Randy and Grant with Kaylin and Emily. Well, there we go, Randy. I think that just might be our longest episode title ever.
Yeah, we were discussing the title. We couldn't quite come up with one that fit, and we decided it was a little too long, and I said, let's just turn to the skid and make it as long as possible.
Let's do it.
I should have just gone extemporaneous and started talking about terriers.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't. Somehow, just I feel like anytime you just start talking for like more than a minute, terriers is just going to drop in there.
I do have terriers Tourette's.
So this week, we have a bunch of TV that is actually debuting this week, but we're not actually going to be discussing anything in our main TV section at the end of this episode because we were able to get an exclusive interview with Kaylin McFarlane and Emily Gibson from the ATX Television Fest here in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, and they were a lot of fun to talk to.
It was a really great interview. They welcomed us to their office downtown.
And I want to work in their office.
Yeah, with that big dog.
Yeah, well, and everybody, they were talking about their day-to-day, about working and talking about TV every day, and I'm like, oh, I want that job. I mean, my job is talking about comics every day, I know.
You work in a comic shop.
I'm aware.
You're already living your dream. You get to have two dreams.
I want two dreams.
Get out of here.
I'm greedy. I want two dreams and a 15-minute title.
But it was a really delightful and insightful interview with them, and they were just huge fans of TV, too.
Yeah.
It was funny because like we were talking about the ins and outs of, you know, orchestrating a festival itself, and then you would veer into like topics that are just more like, what do you think about like TV in general? And they would just like go off the
favorite TV. Yeah, we talked about not just the festival, although there was a lot of interesting stuff there, but also about TV and what they like. And we talked about binging versus one episode at a time, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I had a great time with that, and we hope you guys enjoy that. And you can actually check out more information about the ATX Festival at atxfestival.com, and please do so, because we'd love to see you next year, as long as we're also attending.
Oh, I'm attending. I already got my badge.
Oh, man. I gotta get a badge.
Every year since the first one, and I will never miss it as long as I can get there, because it's great.
Yeah.
If you like TV, you should really be here in June.
And come hang out with us.
Yeah, and it's super hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, bring shorts.
Definitely bring
shorts. But not cargo shorts, because those aren't cool.
No, I keep telling you.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to keep wearing them, so you'll be confident there'll be other people around.
And your fanny pack?
And my fanny pack.
Man, you're a diehard.
And my I Heart Real Rob t-shirt.
There's no excuse for that one, actually. Moving on, we'd like to do a little bit of housekeeping here. And first, we actually have a lot of housekeeping to do this week. I don't know if you saw, but of my show notes I provided at the beginning of the episode, I have a ton of stuff in this category.
Yeah, we have a dirty house and it needs cleaning.
Yeah. First up, we wanted to mention iTunes. You guys can go over there and give us a 5-star rating, write a review. It's a great way to really help out the site, helps promote us, gives us a little bit more visibility, and we like reading the reviews here on the show, so write whatever you want. And we would also like to say, if you have already done an iTunes review, you are welcome to actually write a review anywhere else on the internet and just kind of redirect us to that.
Yep.
If you want to email me, you can do that at grant@thetvdudes.com or admin@thetvdudes.com, and those will shoot over to me. We had someone this week, Tice Comstock, actually wrote a review for us on Netflix, of all places, Randy.
What do you review, Terriers? Probably a favorite. Lost?
Yeah, is that what you think?
Terriers or Lost? One of our favorites. Wait, maybe, The Wire's not on Netflix. One of our favorite shows, I'm sure.
It was Real Rob!
Oh, yeah, one of my favorite shows.
Of course.
To make fun of.
So Ty Comstock went on to Netflix, found Real Rob. He had to probably like search really hard for that one.
Yeah.
Found Real Rob. And he wrote a review and name dropped us in this. So we're going to read his review here. It says, this show is highly revered on the best television podcast on the internet, the TV Dudes. Randy, Grant, and their rotating co-host can't go a single episode without passionately talking about Real Rob. You know, he's not wrong.
That's 100% accurate.
Yeah. Especially Randy. His passion for the show is unrivaled among other professionals in the TV podcast universe.
Still true.
I would give this show 5 stars if it was based on the hours of entertainment that the TV Dudes have provided me on the show. But since the show is a wad of filthy... Oh, no.
Don't you can't read it. It's so dirty. It's so bad.
Filthy goo shot from the deity of Dongocles himself. I did it. It's nothing more than a one-star show that deserves the vitriol it receives. All hail the dong and the dudes. Ty Comstock.
You know, it started off pretty good. I'm not sure if I feel where it veered toward the end. Is Dongocles a thing? I mean, I read some Greek myth when I was in high school. We all did.
Do you not know the great Greek god Dongocles?
I do not remember Dongocles.
Well, then you must not pay attention to the website Rage Select, which I'm also on occasionally.
Oh.
A creation of Jason Murphy, I believe.
Yeah, that all makes sense. Yeah, that all checks out.
It's a video game website, RageSelect.com. Go check it out, listeners. thank you, Ty Comstock. And yes, if any of you other listeners would like to review whatever on the internet, we welcome it. And please send us an email of wherever you review something.
It's Although I have
hilarious.
To say, I am amused at the notion of just all these reviews stacking up for Real Rob.
Oh my God.
Matchstick TV dudes.
Just keep reviewing Real Rob.
Just to see how far it goes before they just delete all of them.
Yeah. please do. Over on patreon.com/TVDudes, that's a way you guys can actually help support the site financially if you are so inclined. Give a dollar to an episode, and in exchange, we give you guys bonus exclusive content just for you guys. That's the word, exclusive.
Exclusive.
And we've been doing like little 30-minute episodes about just general topics that don't necessarily pertain to television. This week, I think we were discussing that we're going to solve the problem with the DC cinematic universe.
I thought we were going to do 30 minutes of me saying the word fief in many different ways.
Oh yeah,
that was work on the other project.
That's an obscure reference.
Yes, it is. No one else can understand that but you and me.
Yeah. But speaking of that other reference, you're talking about the new project we're doing, Beach Cop Detectives.
Yeah.
Which is a Terriers podcast you've been working on.
Very
and
hard.
As of this episode, the first episode released yesterday.
Yes, it did.
Very exciting on the 8th.
Go out and listen to it. Tweet it. Retweet it. Get the word out. We want people to listen to this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Subscribe to it as well.
Yes.
And if you guys are a patron of our site, you get access to the episodes a week early.
Yep. Assuming we get them all finished in time.
Assuming, yes. There's a caveat.
Grant and I have been working very hard at editing these, and it's a lot. It's a lot of work, but I think the polished and the finished project will be worth it.
We are hustling, and we hope you guys have checked out the site and are digging it.
Yeah.
We're pretty proud of this project. And we wanted to say thank you to the newest person to join Patreon and support us, Kyle Shuttler. Thank you so much, man. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kyle.
Also, in related news, I don't know if we've mentioned this yet on the site, but we are joining up with the Permanent Record Podcast Network.
Yeah.
Our buddy Mike Moody, who does TVI as well as along with Nate Bliss,
mm-hmm.
Who's been doing artwork for us for Beach Cop Detectives.
Yes, and that art is great. Wait till you guys see it.
Yeah. Mike Moody's he's decided to launch a podcast network that is mainly revolving around TV podcasts. There's a little bit of pop culture kind of fused in there as well. And we are excited to be a part of that. That
yes,
is
indeed.
Permanent Record. That's RCRD.com. You can
like
go
record.
Check out the website. Yeah, record.
Like the record button.
Yeah.
I love the name.
And go check out the website. It's really cool. We have a couple other people that are part of this. It's Mr. Robot,
yep.
TVI, and then TV Dudes and Beach Cop Detective so far. And I believe there's going to be more joining the podcast network.
So this means that
go
just
support them.
This means just like Gimlet that we're going to get a TV deal now, right?
I hope so.
Yeah, a TV deal where it's about us talking about TV.
That's the dream.
I'll pitch it. I got a pitch.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm looking
sure
forward
I
to that.
It up. Yeah.
And moving on, we have listener questions we got from
listeners.
Yeah. That's hence listener questions. So if you guys like us on Facebook, if you like us on Twitter, we once a week ask for questions from you guys. Anything you really want to ask, if it's TV related, that's a bonus. And our first question comes to us from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, "Hi dudes, has there been a show that got you interested in a subject or activity? For example, Hannibal got you into gourmet cooking." Or eating people. That's interesting. Have you seen something on TV that just like, it's your new obsession?
First of all, I was into eating people but way before it was cool. I want that on the table.
I don't know if it's ever been cool. Really?
Oh, well, then I wasn't
Stop
into it.
Doing
don't,
it. Yeah.
I didn't do that. Top Chef, actually, it's funny you mentioned that. Top Chef has actually got me into wanting to cook more. I definitely sort of saw that, and it got me into, I mean, I've always been sort of a foodie guy, but Top Chef sort of put the notion of chefs and restaurants and that kind of thing more on my radar, where I kind of wanted to follow chefs who are making new restaurants and go to new restaurants and that kind of thing. And like the Food and Wine Festival that they showed on Top Chef, I was like, oh, this all looks like fun. It definitely, I was already a little bit in that direction, but it definitely moved me more in that direction.
Yeah. I never actually fully got into it, but I was definitely interested in the idea of beekeeping after watching Pushing Daisies. Like,
really?
They had their beekeeping stuff up on the roof. Hmm. I was like, there's something like beautiful and exciting about that. And occasionally I'll go and look at these different beekeeping kits that you can kind of install in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And look at that. And then I go, oh yeah, I'm like really allergic to bees. Maybe I shouldn't do this.
That is the worst idea you could have.
I'm one of those people who should probably carry around one of those EpiPens. But
they cost $1,000.
Yeah, those are expensive nowadays. I'll just die instead, I guess. Next question comes to us from Dennis McElwain, who says, hello, dudes and dizzy rotator guest. We don't actually have a guest this week.
No, nobody's dizzy.
Yeah. He says, I have a chance to see two episodes of Ash versus the Evil Dead season 2 and the first episode of Westworld in the cinema. Should I bother considering I will see them on TV soon enough?
I don't know about Ash vs. Evil Dead. That's a fun show. I don't know if it's worth the big screen experience. But our buddy Ollie Nockfe, who was at the TV Fest with us, was doing special effects for Westworld. I'm seemed very excited about it. And I know that Greg got to see the little test reel of it. And by all accounts, the special effects are going to be so spectacular. I'm guessing that Westworld's pilot will be worthy of a cinema experience.
You know, I also think that we don't often get to watch TV around a crowd.
Yeah.
And it is something that's different, and it's actually a really fun experience. You get to see how other people react in an audience to television moments. TV is a very isolated viewing experience.
That's true. I usually lock myself in a bubble. I take off all my clothes. I'm floating in a tank.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
then you think about watching TV.
And then I imagine what season 2 of Terriers would look like.
So sad.
It's very psychedelic. You would not expect it to be. But what you say is interesting, because ATX Fest, one of the things that they do is all these screenings at the Alamo Draft House. Mm-hmm. And so I got to watch an episode of Terriers on the big screen. I got to watch an episode of Hannibal on the big screen. And with a group of people. And yeah, the jokes hit harder, the moments are cooler. It's really a neat experience.
It's always weird to me, because it'll be like a moment where like it's an episode I'm very familiar with, and I'll be like, that's kind of amusing. And then everyone else is just busting up laughing. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Other people thought that was a great joke, apparently. My joke meter's off, I guess.
The only weird thing is, if you're watching TV and you take your pants off,
you went weird again, Randy.
People get really mad at you. Know, like, I do this all the time. I don't know what you guys are so upset about.
Always taking off your pants. Yep. Always eating people.
Yep.
You got to cut these habits out.
I don't always eat people. I keep it very regimented, because otherwise
if you
the
do,
cops
you
will
cook
get on
a,
you.
You cook the hell out of
I
them.
I cook them. I don't eat people raw. I'm not a monster.
No. Kyle Volte says, hey, dudes, what would you say was the first serious grown-up show that you watched? Now, I read this question earlier.
You got an
and
answer?
I was trying to. I was thinking about it. I was like, what constitutes grown-up? Because, I mean, I could say, like, I watched one of my first good live action ones was like the X-Files, but is that grown up, or is it because it's a little bit genre, it's a little bit playful, it's
that's reasonable, is it? Yeah. Is it a non-genre show? Because that's tougher. I don't know. Like, I look back at my early TV days, and it was like A-Team and Dukes of Hazzard and Three's Company and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, can I say Murder, She Wrote?
None of that was grown up.
I watched Murder, She Wrote all the time.
Murder, She Wrote might be the first grown-up show. I'm trying to think when my first grown-up show
Magnum
was.
Magnum P.I.?
It was embarrassingly late that I watched my first grown-up TV show, I'll tell you that. I was definitely watching mostly comedies, and I don't think I watched like an actual grown-up drama until like X-Files when I was in college.
I mean, if we like strip aside over the top 80s stuff, let's say the modern era.
Yeah.
Even Oz. Is Oz a little bit too like exploitative that
Oz,
it wouldn't
you know,
be grown
Oz,
up?
Oz could be considered a grown up show, I think, because it is mature content and that kind of thing.
Oz was certainly one of those shows where I felt like I was trying to be an adult sneaking downstairs and watching it.
Yeah, I think that
this
definitely
is a show
counts.
I can't watch, but I'm watching it.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't have. It was fucked up.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up.
All right, and our next question comes to us from Zach McLernan, who wants a little bit of an early review. We're going to discuss this show next week, but He is asking what our thoughts are on Atlanta.
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I do want to say that I have seen the first episode, and if you guys are on Facebook, you can go and watch the first episode. They posted it up there as well.
Yeah, it's so on YouTube, too.
Yeah, it's freely available there on YouTube. Plenty of places where you guys can watch it, and I highly recommend you go watch it. It's very good.
I'm excited to watch it and talk about it next week.
Yeah, we're going to go much more in depth into our thoughts on that.
We're going to talk about all the FX comedies. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about You're the Worst, which I love. And we're going to talk about the new show from Pamela Adlon and Louis C.K.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whose name, Insecure, I believe.
Is it?
I don't know. No, that's an HBO show.
Oh, we'll have to look it up.
We'll look it up. Better Things. It's called Better Things.
Oh, okay. You looked it up.
Good. I did. Yeah.
So what do we got in the news, Randy?
All right. So I want to start with, they're doing a Heather's show. TV Land is doing it. It's an anthology series.
TV Land. Ooh, exciting.
Now, I didn't think I would care at all about this. I just rewatched Heather's the other day because my daughter found it on Amazon, and it's okay. It doesn't.
I never saw it, actually.
It's okay. It doesn't particularly hold up for me, but it's interesting. It holds up better than some of the other work of Winona Ryder, like her
Beetlejuice. No, it holds up better than Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice is amazing.
Okay,
I'm talking about her her thing from Ben Stiller, the thing where she was like the just out of college, that I'm totally blanking on the name of it.
Man, I don't even. It obviously didn't hold up.
I don't know. At any rate, I rewatched that and I wanted to strangle all of them. So I rewatched Heather's. And I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. But here's the thing. The pilot's being directed by Leslie Headland, which is a name you may not know. She did The Bachelorette, Sleeping with Other People. She was one of the staff writers on Terriers.
That's why I recognize the name. I'm like, I've heard that recently.
Yep, that's why. And she is directing the pilot. And that raises my expectations. I'm curious to see. So Heather's is about a girl who, she's a teenager. She's in with these popular girls. They're all named Heather, except for her. She's named Veronica. And she has a boyfriend who's like this new bad boy who's moved to school, played by Christian Slater, who turns out to be homicidal and starts killing popular kids, and they pretend it's suicides. It's a black comedy, and I guess that the Heather's TV show is going to be about Veronica moving back to the town with her teenage daughter, who would have to deal with the Ashleys, the daughter of the surviving Heathers. It's definitely gone through some changes. We don't actually know. It's been compared to the anthology approach to Fargo, which, of course, people are going to compare it to Fargo because it's great.
Yeah.
And you want to compare it to that. But we don't really know where they're going with it yet. But Leslie Headland had a statement. She said, I related with it so much, I can't believe they got away with so much. This movie was a huge influence on an entire generation, and it'll be nice to introduce to a new generation. The idea that I get to bring this vision to light is a dream come true. That's pretty interesting. And
cool.
I like her work, so I'm suddenly interested in a TV Land show.
You are a huge Bachelorette fan.
I do love The Bachelorette. Grant, have you seen Narcos season 2?
I haven't started yet.
Do you know who dies in it?
Pablo.
Yeah, you know how I found out? Fucking Netflix, man.
What about the news?
Yeah.
Yeah, real life.
No, I knew he died. Like, I didn't know he died in season 2.
Like, they were close to it. I thought it was only, they announced that a long time ago that he was going to die.
I don't know. I didn't know they were going to kill him off, and I wish I could have had a chance to watch Narcos before they told me that.
Oh.
I've watched 3 episodes of it. I'm really liking
it. Well, now we've told everyone else.
Yeah.
So.
I'm liking season 2 so far, and I guess that's good because they're going to do season 3 and 4, and it's going to be about somebody else.
Is it going to be about one of the detectives just investigating more narcotic drug rings?
It says it's about cocaine, and cocaine continues beyond Escobar. Executive producer said, I'll go as long as they let me. And they said they'll stop when the drug trade stops.
Never gonna end. Awesome.
So, yeah,
okay.
I'm I'm curious what they'll do.
You know, I'm glad they didn't name the show Pablo or something like that.
That would have been bad.
The fact that they did Narcos, they can go a while with this.
Narcos is the closest thing I have to like watching procedural comfort TV.
Yeah.
Because it's not as great as a lot of what I watch, but it's this nice blend of sort of what I liked about Goodfellas and And what I liked about the Jack Ryan, the third Jack Ryan movie where they're like dealing with all the stuff, the drug dealing down in Colombia.
Which one was that?
It was
Clear
and Present Danger. Yeah.
Okay.
And it feels like a mix of those two things. It's in no way equal to either of those things.
No.
But it gives me the same sort of feel. Like, oh, it's got the narration and it's about criminals and I kind of enjoy it. So
yeah.
I'm glad to have a season three and four. I don't know when I'll get around to watching them.
Well, I need to get back on it.
Yeah. They released at the perfect time.
I need to get back on that white horse.
Get on that white horse.
You know what I mean.
Get on the white rabbit, which is another Netflix project.
Oh, segue.
Hell yeah.
King.
So White Rabbit is the people behind Mythbusters, not Adam Savage and Jamie Hyneman.
The trio of assistants.
Yeah. Carrie. Tori and Grant.
Grant, what a man. I'm excited for Grant Imahara.
You are always excited when people announce Grants on TV.
You know, there's not enough Grants on TV.
It's true.
There was a Grant on Ninja Warrior, American Ninja Warrior this season.
Yeah.
Kind of disappointing.
Oh. He didn't represent for the League
of Grants. Actually, there's two Grants.
Yeah.
Two Grants on Ninja Warrior. I need to be on there.
Yeah, you should get on Ninja Warrior.
I can't do a sit-up, though.
Yeah.
So
I can't see that be a problem.
Why would it be?
But anyway, they're doing something called White Rabbit Project. It's a new unscripted series where they will they'll be on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be doing the sort of thing where they're kind of doing the building stuff they were doing for Mythbusters. It sounds like they said they described the show as Mythbusters in Wonderland.
I like that. It's like they're going to do kind of their fantasy projects.
Yeah,
that it's not necessarily going to be so concerned with like debunking myths,
right?
As it's going to be the science of doing really cool, fun, crazy stuff.
Weird and wonderful events from pop culture, science, and history. Jailbreaks, superpower technology, heists, and crazy World War II weapons. Sounds like fun.
It does. I'm excited for these three. I think they got a lot of talent. I'm glad Netflix nabbed them.
Well, that premieres on December 9th. Tyrant has been canceled after 3 seasons.
And Greg goes, no! Actually, I don't really care. I only kind of watch.
And Grant and Randy go, shrug.
Yeah, shrug. I never watched it. No.
And this is just a note to mention that Luke Cage is getting great early reviews.
Yeah. That's just, I put that in there as this note because it's kind of exciting. People are saying, oh, it's the best, or it just perfectly fits in with the other shows in the Netflix Marvel series.
Yeah.
And every time I see a scene on it, it's so good.
Here's what I want to know. And it's not like I have a ton of free time, but I am a huge comic guy,
mm-hmm.
and a huge TV guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who do I have to kill to get early access to these shows? I'm just saying.
Why do you have to kill people all the time? Who do I have to eat around here?
Yeah, if I don't kill them, I can't eat them.
This is so messed up. All right, well, let's take a break and let's get into an interview. And hopefully you don't eat our guests.
I did not eat either guest, for the record. Here with ATX Television Festival's Caitlin and Emily, and we've been wanting to do this for a while, guys, because we've been coming to the ATX Fest since year one, and we've been podcasting the whole time, and we love the show every year, and every year we love it more, and you guys are always busy, but I'm like, I figured I'd reach out and see about having you guys on the show, so welcome to the TV dudes.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. It's impressive you've been since season one. Mm-hmm. Because it was a small gathering.
I've listened to a couple of them, but I definitely listened to this year's recap. And my favorite thing is that you refer to the festival as the show, as a show. We do it as a season, but like, I love that it's referred to as the show. I like came into the office, I was like, guys, they call it the show.
So I was curious, how did you guys first get all this started? I know there was a Kickstarter, but where did this all come from?
It basically came from being fed up with being assistants. We were both assistants for a number of years. We met in LA. I was in New York prior to this. This is Caitlin, by the way, and was in the Woodlands with my parents, which is where I'm from, trying to decide what was next in life, and thought I might go work for a festival, be it AFF or South by Southwest or something. And in doing that, Em and I had a number of conversations about TV, about our DVRs, and realized that we cared more about TV than film at the time. And I wanted to go work for a TV festival and just could not find something that was what I wanted to go to. I could find elements of it in various different events, but not what we wanted to go to. So through conversations with Em, we basically like came up with the bones of what the festival is, which is what it still is. 50% fan, 50% industry, a third past, a third current, a third upcoming in terms of what our content is. And then just set out asking people we had worked with for years, why isn't there one? Would you come to one? What would you want to come to? And spent a year building an advisory board, asking anybody who had legitimate TV if they would come to Austin, and doing that Kickstarter, which wasn't until January, and we still had a festival in June. So it was it was baby steps, yeah. But yeah.
What was the moment you guys remember as like, oh, this is going to happen?
The most vivid moment for me was when we signed the hotel contract, because that was the first thing. Up until that point, we had signed a lot of things that we could get out of. It was a hold on a place, but we didn't have to put any money down and we could cancel it with plenty of time to spare. But that was the time where we were actually going to be held liable for a certain amount of money. And so at that moment, as we were signing, we were looking at each other going, okay, something is happening the first weekend of June, whether it's just all of our friends and family and we're throwing a really big party where we watch TV in the hotel ballroom, something is happening.
I actually don't think we were looking at each other because you were in LA and I was in Houston. I remember a number of, because Emily takes a long time to process. When she has made a decision, it is really good, but you needed
but we
a lot of time.
December. It was in December and I came in December for
maybe that was like by the end, but there was, it was a very long amount of conversation. But then the second one to that was, so we did commit to it. Neither one of us are married, so we hadn't had a wedding. So we were like, everybody should just come to the hotel and we'll have a party if this festival doesn't happen. And then the end of January, when the Kickstarter was successful, we were like, well, we're doing something.
At that point, it was, oh, people we don't know are coming.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, it was, oh, everyone we've ever met is going to be required to be at this. But after Kickstarter, the first time someone donated at Kickstarter, we're like, do you know who this person is? I don't know who this person is. This is a complete stranger that donated to Kickstarter. So at that point, it was people we didn't know were coming, and we were going to hold something for them.
Yeah. Although it was all the way up till the our first festival was 36 hours. Mm-hmm. So Friday night, we had an opening night, and it was really just like Saturday and half of Sunday. And I remember Friday during the day as like people were landing, like panelist, Emily was like, what do you think they think they're coming to? Like, do they know? Like, are they confused? Did they get on that plane by accident?
Well, one of the things that struck me about it is, you've talked about this, is how friendly it is between the fans and the pros. And it's like, it's not where there's like a velvet rope keeping everybody separate. Everybody mixes in. The first few years, we went to the bar and we chatted up with, who do we wind up talking to? All these people we just talked to in the bar. And it was all friendly, and nobody's like stopping and taking a bunch of selfies. It's everybody's there to love TV.
I think that we lucked into that the first year, and it's the thing we're always on a constant fear that we will lose, and something that we're fiercely protective of as something that is so due to the people who come, both on the panelist side and on the fan side. Like, we try to say through as much communication as possible, like, you're not showing up to this for one person or one show, because one, I can't deliver on that always. You never know what's going to happen. But also, you should come because you love TV. And we have found that TV fans, it doesn't matter if you're an actor or a creator or a producer or a casting director, like, they just love TV and want to talk about it. And that level of intellect and fervor doesn't have sort of the, I want to stand in line and pay $20 and get you to sign this thing and take a picture, which is the thing we stay so far away from. And then the panelist side, the thing that was such a lovely thing to learn was they are just as much a fan of television as you are. Like they, Scott Porter is the biggest TV fan on the planet. Like he will talk about just about anything at any time. But I mean, one of my favorite memories from year one was Bill Lawrence going up to Firefly writers and being like, I love Firefly. It's so amazing. And that was what we try to hold on to as much as possible from both sides of that, is that mentality.
What do you guys think has changed the most from year one to the most recent season?
Number of people.
I was about to say, honestly, the number of people. Because even, I mean, we all know season four revolved a lot around a certain show. Mm-hmm. And
Terriers.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
No, that was five. That was season five.
That was just for me.
But season four, so a year over a year ago, revolved a lot around Gilmore Girls. And we grew so much because of that. But this year, we had the same number of people, maybe a little bit more, but this year it revolved around all of the shows. I mean, yes, we had a big West Wing contingent and people were very excited about the big Friday Night Lights event we did and Ugly Betty and those more tentpole shows. But at the same time, people were going to everything and they were equally excited about everything. So this year we had a great amount of people and they were all equally excited about the whole programming, not just specific things.
So when you said about establishing your plan for what you're going to have for the next year, is it a matter of getting the different talent and then figuring out how they fit onto panels, or do you guys try to like define certain panels and then reach out to
this was
individuals?
The first year that we didn't just the for 4 years we booked shows and who's coming with the show, and then we would look very close to the festival, like, okay, I have all of these people, like what conversation can they have, and we would build the less show specific panels around like the group of people. This was the first year that we came up with conversations that we wanted to have and went after people that could have those conversations. So like David Simon and Tom Fontana were invited to have a conversation together and then put them on other panels versus we're doing The Wire and we have David Simon. Let's also do a conversation. We did that with a few people, whether that was doing the panel we did with the TV Academy, the Powerful Medium panel, there's a few. Oh, the LGBT barrier tropes panel that we did with GLAAD. Those were conversations that we started and then found people to be on them versus we've got all these really awesome people. Let's have conversations with them, which we still do. But this, I think another, to Emily's point, the reason this year's programming didn't feel one person or one show contingent was that it was just way more balanced in terms of people and shows. It wasn't hinging on a single reunion or a single person.
Right. Do you guys have particular, and I talked a little bit when I did my Terriers podcast, which won't have aired by this point, so this is probably a non sequitur. But when I talk with David about what shows, you know, and who to get, and what the white whales are, you guys have gotten a lot of like the big names. Do you have a particular person or show that you really like to bring to the show, to bring to this, to ATX at some point?
Well, my favorite show of all time is Buffy. Okay. And so having some sort of Buffy spotlight is definitely on high, very high up on the list. I think because they've done things before and it's a big Comic-Con show, I don't know. We want to do something special with it because the reunions we've done so far are ones that at least up to a point hadn't been done. Mm-hmm. And they are shows that didn't have anywhere else to go. So it was very special for us to bring those people back together. And so in highlighting something like Buffy, that was such a cultural phenomenon as well, really making sure what we're doing with it is special and a bit outside the box. And I just don't know what that is yet.
Yeah. I mean, since the first year, our joke has been, and now it's like we've met so many amazing people and gone after so many white whales that like it's still the line that I like is it was Joss and JJ. It was JJ for me and it was Joss for Emily. And like there have been times where like we didn't want them year one or two or three. Like once you had like they have become a white whale in that sense that like they're just sort of in the distance as a like at this point, like I mean Aaron Sorkin, JJ Abrams, like you're kind of close to each other in terms, I mean, JJ's been kind of busy this last like year and a half, like whatever, but like that's, yeah, but that's still like on a just sort of list. My weird one is Walton Goggins. He is literally my white whale.
You guys almost had him.
We've almost had him a number of times. That's why he's like really the white whale. It's like, he's like in my reach.
So
like,
elusive.
Yes. Sam, someday it'll happen.
So you mentioned Buffy being one of your favorite. I won't put you guys on the spot, but the Fave 7 thing was trending. And I don't know if you the favorite seven TV shows. Mm-hmm. I don't know if either of you guys did it. But without having to go down a list, what are some of your favorite shows that would make that list?
Mine are classics. So it's interesting to find, like, a lot of them are classic. What I was raised on was I Love Lucy and Dick Van Dyke.
Okay.
Like, they're my happy place when I'm sad or sick or it's raining and I just need, like, a calm. Like, those are shows I still laugh at. Friends is on that list. Favorite sevens of all was Friday Night Lights, The West Wing, Gilmore Girls was probably on that list.
Mm-hmm. I would add for me, I mean, Queer as Folk was one of my favorite shows of all time, and we did it last year. And then The Office is very high on the list, so maybe sometime down the road.
The American.
The American.
Yes, The American Office. I mean, I love The British Office, but I feel like The American Office, I mean, it went on for a little bit longer.
It stuck around.
It's more in every day of my life for however many years.
Yeah.
So what are you guys, some of your favorite shows right now? What are you watching that you're enjoying?
If you think about it as a year versus like the summer season, The Americans is very high on my list.
I just started watching it.
My goal is
to watch it so I can be caught up by the next season and then watch the next season live.
Yeah.
That's one of the benefits of a 13-episode season.
So yes.
Yeah.
I love season two of You're the Worst.
Which I just finished.
Oh, I love You're the Worst.
Yeah, it's so good. It is.
So I just finished it in time for the next season.
It's one of my favorite comedies. I love everybody in it.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's a show that I love so much. And I think it's a shame that not enough people are watching it, but I'm glad it's on FX who are giving time to do its thing.
Yep. I just named two FX shows. We should probably spread the love.
I was like, what am I looking excited about? I mean, I love Jane the Virgin. I'm excited for that to come back. And
Superstore.
Superstore was a surprise for me.
It was
I didn't know what to expect from an NBC show. You
agreed.
Know? I love Ben Feldman and I love America Ferrera and I love everybody in that cast actually. But I didn't think much of a sitcom set in a Best Buy kind of thing. I'm like, come on. But
it was a surprise. I really, really enjoyed that on the whole cast. Colton Dunn and like that Lindsay. I'm not going to remember their names. Lauren Ash. That ensemble cast is really wonderful. I loved Kingdom this season.
Oh,
okay. It's AT&T U-verse.
I like Many People Flew Through Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very much enjoyed that.
We actually just did an episode last night where we talked sort of fan theories about Stranger Things and some of the questions about is Eleven the monster and that kind of stuff.
Oh.
I don't... Grant is much more the deep dive guy. He was the guy who did all the Lost.
Yeah, we went a little bonkers.
We looked at some of the fan theories. Some of them are crazy.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some stuff where they were talking about, whether or not Eleven had influence over the monster. And
interesting. I would definitely, I could see them being connected somehow, clearly, by her power.
Like she created him somehow.
Yeah.
Well, going back to the festival, I was kind of curious, when you started off the first year, it's a lot of learning lessons, I'm sure. How have you guys managed the growth and what are some of the areas that you've been, you've really kind of focused on for growing the festival?
Really, as you get bigger, obviously the logistics are a huge thing. So we now have a director of operations, even just in how we're forming our lines and how we're letting people in and how we're communicating with people as things are filling up. And now, I mean, the first couple of years, you guys know, you could get into anything you wanted to at any time. And now people are getting in line a little bit earlier and you have to maybe choose your second choice as opposed to getting into the first thing. So really figuring out how to communicate that just on a bigger scale, but keep it feeling small and keep it feeling that you're still getting to go to your top things, which even this year, we do fast passes for to help people get into the top things that they want. And so we added a fast pass this year and did a lottery system.
Really was what changed that. So it didn't feel the pressure in the moment.
Yes.
But we also, I think people ask us all the time, how big do you want to get? Or how are you growing? And we started at 700 people and we were at 2,500 this year. And it, with the exception, the year 3 to 4, the Gilmore Girls year, we doubled in size in 1 year, 100% increase. So this year was a manage that, Emily said, a few hundred more people, but really feel what 2,500 people feels like. Our big point has been, we added venues this year. Mm-hmm. Our big point has been the rooms stay small, but there may be more things happening at once. So I know this year was for a lot of people, there were a lot of choices to be made. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of programming going on at the same time. And I think we have some room to grow into same number of venues and same sizes this year into next year. But ultimately those rooms, with the exception of the Paramount, which is very marquee, big programming, the rooms are anywhere between 70 and 500 people. Like, they, we are not in 5,000 room. Even the Paramount is 1,200. We don't want convention room, impersonal, not intimate and accessible is the goal in everything that we program. So it may be more things happening and therefore more people,
right,
but not let me just like rent out the convention center and throw you all into one room.
You don't want to do Hall H.
Right. Basically. Exactly.
Cause I've done San Diego. I haven't done it in many years, but I did it for about 11 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And I watched that change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching what you guys are doing, and it's like night and day.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing against San Diego. That's a big, big event to manage.
Right.
But it got to the point where I used to be able to go and a smaller show or whatever, I could get in line maybe an hour at a time and get in the panel. And at this point, if you want to see the TV shows, the movies, that's your con experience.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's it. You're going to be in Hall H, and you're going to be sitting there through stuff you don't want to see.
That was... We did, the year before the first festival, we did a lot of research. I had worked on film festival sides. I had been to Sundance and Tribeca, both on the festival and the filmmaker side of those. We did Comic-Con that year, so it was 2011. We did South by Southwest. We did Austin Film Festival, and really like experienced it as a festival goer with the thought of putting one on. And so what is the experience that you want to have? And yes, you've got a lot of people going to a lot of things, so lines is a thing that you have to have.
But I like hate lines.
My experience at Comic-Con, and I was there a day before Emily, so I spent a day just like wandering around with no like real intention to see anything, but just like, what does this feel like? And I wandered into a line for what I believe was Hall H. There's two big ones, right?
Hall H and Room 20.
Okay, it was one of those two. Yeah. And I was in line for True Blood, which was like a few hours away. And I was like, well, whenever I get in, I'll just sit in there. Yeah. And I was in line for 5 hours and got about 30 people away from getting in. And I honestly didn't even really care, but I was like, wow, I have been in line for 5 hours of this day and I didn't get into this thing. And so that was when we implemented, like, we do clear rooms. Like, if you have a fast pass, you can stay. But like, the last thing I want from both sides of the aisle is sitting in a room for something you don't want to see, both for the person on stage,
right,
who's like, you don't care, you're just sitting through me, and for the person outside that actually wanted to see that thing.
Right.
Like, that became a big point of ours that we've managed through, again, fast passes. And we don't want to make it so much extra work for you to leave the room and come back in. But at the same time, that there's certain things that you have to implement in order to sort of protect both sides of that experience.
Well, that's one of the things I thought. The fast passes were a really good innovation. And the first year I got kind of frustrated because I couldn't get any. And then this year guys did the lottery system, mm-hmm, and I got everything I wanted.
Nice.
So everything you guys do, even if something doesn't work immediately, I feel like you figure it out and you fix it the next time.
That's the hope.
And I think you guys have one of the best structured festivals that I've seen.
Well, that's a big deal for us. We really spend a lot of time leading into the festival trying to walk through every type of attendee's experience. So whether it's a panelist or a sponsor or a volunteer or a general badge holder or press, however you might be coming, we want you to have a really great experience and we want you to feel important. So we know that we can't please everyone, which is something that I've had a hard time letting go of. But it really is taking that time of, okay, you have arrived. Now what happens? How does this work? Okay, you have to wait in line. What is that experience like for you? And every year we get a little bit better, and every year we try and get better beyond that. So any bad experiences from season 5, we do surveys and we take those experiences into account and try and fix them as best as we can for the next year. Mm-hmm. Because that's really important. I mean, it's all about the community for us. So the community needs to be having a good time and feel taken care of and that they're being heard and that they are all part of it together.
We're big on, like, when we have these meetings with people we're programming with or sponsors or anybody like that, it's quality over quantity. The line that we've used a lot is, again, talking to like a Hall H or a Room 20, is 5,000 people also is not an audience for your show. That's not going to save your show. Those might be the only 5,000 people,
right,
that care about it.
Yeah.
So 500 or 5,000, the quantity doesn't actually make that big of a difference, but the quality does. If those people are talking to their friends and family, if they have a really intimate and unique experience, if they're taking to social media, you can take 2,500 people at our festival and quantify it much bigger than those 2,500 people, be it... Also from we're filming more things now and getting them up on websites so that we have an online audience so that we can protect that experience in a small way that still is valuable to big brands and shows that we've run into some people who are like, well, what do you mean there's only 100 people in my theater? Like, why am I going to bring down the whole cast of X, Y, or Z and pay all of this money if it's only 100 people? And really leaning on the press and the quality of the fan that is in that room, and then the fact that it will live on the internet.
The argument that it's based on the tastemaker, so
right,
one person,
exactly,
the equivalent of 50 or 100.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm curious about your advisory board, which I know just keeps growing. More and more impressive names. I think you guys just added someone, right?
Glenn Mazzara and Kathleen McCaffrey and Phil Rosenthal. Kathleen's an executive at HBO. So
how does that, how do you guys interact with the advisory board? Is it something where like they're on call? Do you guys do meetings? How does that work?
We do. Well, so the standing rule to be on the advisory board at this point is you have to come 2 years, because we found it can be a different experience. And so once they've been 2 years, if we all still like each other, we invite them to be on the advisory board. And it really is different based on the person. We do want to start working with them more in a group, like be that meeting, as obviously everybody lives in different places at times and are very busy making TV, which we appreciate. But depending on who they are, be them executive or creator or somebody based in Austin, we may call on them literally for advice on different things, or help with programming, or help with partnerships.
They're great resources for us. We use them all the time. Yeah. We absolutely call on them, whether it's a general call out of, hey, we're trying to get to this person, who knows them, yeah, or a specific, we know that you produced this show with this person, we're actually trying to get to this person for another show, will you do an yeah, introduction
happened
for us
this week?
Yeah, absolutely. And then they come to us with ideas as well. Like Bo mm-hmm. Williman came to us with a couple ideas last year that turned out great. And so we do lean on them in a, hey, whether it's a sponsorship or for particular programming or just to get to the right person, we absolutely call on all
and
of
they,
them.
And they started as year one, that advisory board was nobody knows who we are. Yeah. ATX Television Festival means nothing. Right. We had been assistants for 10 years and we did have relationships, but our name meant nothing. And really like our resume spoke to a lot of experience, but not experience running a festival or running a show or anything like that. So we went to people we trusted and people they trusted and sort of said, but your name means something. Would you put your name on this? You literally, year one was, you don't have to do anything. You don't even have to come, but do you like the idea enough and trust us enough? And like, are you willing to like slightly risk like putting your name on something? And we were, I mean, we had never met Julie Plec and Liz Tigler, and they put their names on it. Our mentors put their names on it. Rick Linklater here in town, I had worked with his sister who is a sound engineer in LA. And I had like a very long meeting with him where he was like, but I'm not a TV guy. And I was like, but you're an Austin guy and you're an arts guy and this should be good for a medium and for the city. And he agreed to try it out. And it's been enjoyable watching him be like, you guys actually did a thing. Like, I didn't know what this would be. Like, so that first year, that advisory board, and we still have listed, some of them kind of leave and come back based on if they haven't been in a number of years, or it's just they've left the industry or whatnot. But at the on our website, it always has the founding advisory board members because they put their name on it before mm-hmm. it was anything.
So I was curious, what has been one of the most standout moments of the festival for you guys?
Well, there's always, I mean, for me, it's from the first year standing in the parking lot of Hotel San Jose with the Friday Night Lights cast, watching it play on the big screen, watching a parking lot full of people cry together and standing around as they are watching and on. Jason Kadams and his wife are standing to one side, Scott Porter, Matt Loria, all these people, and thinking, because it was the first year on Saturday night, not Friday night, it was pretty much, we were almost done. I mean, we just had Sunday morning, a few panels on Sunday to go. And so it was a bit of a, oh my gosh, I'm standing with these people from this show that I love at this thing that we created, and it worked. People are excited. More people are still coming to it. And just having that moment of, okay, we have something. Because from Friday, the day before that, when we're looking at each other going, I don't know what this is. What are these people coming to? Do they know what they're coming to? To get to the really the end of the first full day and say, okay, this really worked and people are excited and they do love TV mm-hmm. as much as we do. And these shows that haven't gotten to be celebrated in Friday Night Lights had never been celebrated in that way, in the way that it should have been. So to have that, this is something moment was incredible.
Yeah, I feel like we talk at different times, like what is the standout moment from each year? Yeah. And I can remember both sides of the coin. The first year, literally hiding from people because I was getting word from like the Alamo that there was like 7 people in a theater, and that felt like so painful and uncomfortable to me that I was like being a complete coward. I mean, like, maybe if I don't see them, they won't tell me like what a horrible time they've had. And then that Sunday, after Friday Night Lights on Saturday night, our last two screenings back to back were Firefly with Ben Edlund and Jose Molina, and a Parenthood screening with, I mean, Dax Shepard and Mae Whitman and Jason Kadams and Jason Ritter and all these people. And they were the two full theater, the only two full theaters of the whole weekend were the last two time slots. And being like, oh, we just needed a, like, there's only 700 people here and it's a first year of a festival. And by the way, the people that were leaving that had 7 or 8 people in those theaters were saying, but they were really great 7 or 8 people. Like, they asked questions I'd never heard of. Like, that was a really intimate conversation. Like, I would totally do it. They weren't upset. I was hiding from them for no reason. But like, and as they're headed to the airport, they're like, so next year, I want to do this, this, and this. And Emily and I are like, we're doing it again. So like having those moments from each year all the way up to like a full Paramount Theater, which we never thought we'd be able to grow into, to, you know, having some of our idols say, if you need anything from me ever, I will come back to this. Or like this year it was Kurt Sutter going, did I say no to you a few times? Like, have you asked me to this before? And I was like, actually, I don't think we have, mainly because we didn't want to ask you if we didn't have something really great for you to do. Yeah. So this year he did The Shield, but he did The Conversation with Katie and all of these other things. And he goes, well, I don't know if you know, but I don't really do these things. And like, if you ever need anything from me, like, I would totally come back to this. And we're like, really? Like, why? I mean, I love that. But so like those moments with people that we've heard, like, don't do things. And then they come and do this and say that they would do it again. Like that, same with like a badge holder leaving, going like, I wasn't really sure what this was going to be like, or I didn't have the best time last year, but then I came back and this is like really great. And so all those sides of the coin, if anybody would come back, I'm like, great. This is wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed like when you're talking about the kind of cross section of different TV audiences, you have some people that are going to love Parenthood and maybe not attend another panel as much. And it seems like with year 5, you guys got really good about finding that cross section of different TV shows and genres that, like, I went to all those panels and all of them were like really well attended, and the audiences were really, I don't want to say fanatic, but they were like really engaged with the crowd. And so it was like, I guess you've troubleshooted all those issues and like really made it a really engaging experience. In fact, like us as podcasters, we were able to meet other television podcasters at a side event that we attended this year. So it's nice to kind of expand this TV watching family, I guess.
Well, and I think too is, I mean, it's still, there's things popping up and like TV is growing and therefore TV festivals or elements of TV in festivals is growing, which we think is great. But it is still rare to have a completely solely based in TV event. And so I really enjoy that it is still fans and it is press and it is podcasters and it is studios and networks and it's all of these people that come together. Like, TV more than anything, any other medium, weirdly enough, I feel like is such a community-based medium. Like, you may watch alone, but like it is a shared experience both in making it and viewing it in a way that music and movies aren't always, be it the amount of time that goes into it or whatnot. Like, it just, it feels like, it always felt like a medium that was ripe for a festival because that's what a festival is.
Well, I feel like something about the serial storytelling and the water cooler aspect where you're talking, like you say, it's something you may do by yourself, but part of the enjoyment of TV, of good TV, is to talk about it with other people. And we had like Television Without Pity and Place to Do It Online, but in person is such a different experience. Yeah.
That's the greatest joy of our office is the 5 of us, and that there are 5 full-time, we come in and talking about what we watched over the weekend, what we're in the middle of, forcing each other to watch things that maybe someone was resisting. But it really is, that's when we have those conversations that can sometimes go on for hours, that's the moment we're like, oh yes, we are all in the right business. Well, we love what we are doing and we created this festival for us because of how much we love talking about these stories and immersing ourselves in them and what's new and even what's old. I mean, now we're going back with our reunions and our older programming. We're going back and watching shows that we had somehow missed or were before our time.
And that was, I mean, year one, and it has been every year, the number of people, I mean, we called it TV camp, mm-hmm. but the number of people that we found were meeting each other for the first time at the festival, but had talked for years, like on Twitter or on a Television Without Pity. And like, they always knew each other, but they had never met each other face to face. And this becomes like the place they go every summer to see each other in a way that I think is so cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. I think that one of the changes we see in TV is binging. You mentioned it, that with Netflix and all the streaming and everything being on Blu-ray and DVD is that it used to be the show's lifespan was sort of finite. And now everything's available. One of the things about discussion TV I think is interesting is that you can talk about a show that's been off the air for 20 years and you've both discovered on the same day.
Right. Yes.
But I also think it can be challenging. Do you guys run into challenges when you're talking TV? Like, oh, wait, I haven't seen that yet. Can we hang out on the
If it's in the first few years of it, it feels like you should even, and I mean years, like it feels like you've still have time to catch up. Like we haven't ruined The Americans in any way. I don't know that you really can spoil The Americans, but for Emily, but I feel like there was one recently. I mean, I think we were talking finales and we were talking about like St. Elsewhere finale and Bob Newhart finale and these ones that have like a bit of a twist. And it's like, I mean, we talk about those.
Yeah. There's got to be some time on that. There's
I don't think I've ruined the Shield finale for you. I just may have overhyped it to a huge degree.
But there are certain things where, if we are discussing them or if someone in the office hasn't seen a show in completion, then you kind of have to give in to you guys can talk about it because it's going to be a while. So for me, I don't binge shows very well. It takes me a while to watch a show. So when something comes out on a Netflix or an Amazon and it all comes out at once, the rest of the office knows it's going to take me a while to watch it. Mm-hmm. So I have to decide.
She watched Stranger Things in a week.
That was a huge deal.
I watched it in a day and a half.
But it's a big deal for me to watch something in a week. And so I have to then be the one to say, okay, you guys can just talk about it. Like if it's good enough, even if you tell me the twist, like Orange is the New Black this past season, I haven't watched it yet. Yeah. I know what happens. I know the big thing. Everyone was talking about it. And I think, from what I've been told, that it was done well enough, I still need to go watch it, and that's okay.
Well, and
that's a lot of great shows. If the show is good enough, then even, I mean, no one wants to be spoiled, but even if there's a little spoiler or a moment that needs to be talked about in real time, it doesn't diminish how great the show is and whether or not you should still watch it.
Well, I think it's very rare that, like, that spoiler is really going to ruin it, that twist is so good, that thing is so whatever, that, like, the thing about serialized storytelling is that it's a slow build. It's all of the details. It's how we got there. So like half the time somebody spoiled something for me, like with that twist, and I still didn't see it coming by the time I got there because it was so well done that it doesn't really, half the time I look at it, I'm like, I want to talk to you about like an idea. And in doing that, I have to tell you what happened in last night's episode of whatever. And she's like, go ahead.
Which I'm usually fine with.
Yeah. Well, that's another interesting question is that the Netflix and Hulu have different models as far as releasing. Do you guys have a preference on everything dropping at once or the standard 1 week release?
M is week to week.
I am week to week.
I think it's less for me how they deliver it to me and more what I decide to do. Like there are shows that I watch, like I like to watch two or three at a time, to be honest. Like it's rare that I do at this point. It's rare that I do a Stranger Things like day and a half, 2 day. Like, I mean, just like swallow the whole thing. But like, when I watched the night of the first episode, like immediately I wanted three. I didn't want to watch eight. I wanted to watch three. Like I was very much like, ah, like it was the first one in a long time that after the end of the first episode, I was really annoyed that I hadn't waited like a few weeks to have them built up.
That's exactly what you said when you watched it. You're like, I wanted the next one now. And you've said on like every episode of the night.
But then it's interesting about the night of, which we talk about Stranger Things and the night of, is that we both recognize they're very, very good. And like there's no complaints or criticisms about either of them. I'm more into the night of than she is, and she was more into Stranger Things than I was. Mm-hmm. But like the thing that I want to rewatch the night of is that like loved the first episode, like totally hooked, wanted a couple more. Mm-hmm. And then two was much slower. Yeah. Not a lot happens in two. And I was like,
they always have the ending.
It was good, but then like at the end of two, I was sort of like, well, is it as good as like the first? Like I didn't have the same reaction to one, and then three picks it back up. That had I watched one through three at once, I don't think I would have even blinked that two was slower.
Yeah.
It just like wasn't what one was. And I was just having like a moment of like, wait, what is this show? What's happening?
Yeah, that's true. A really good first episode. And then the second of delivery can kind of put you off. And that's a danger.
Well, and the conversation I had with somebody else in our office was that it wasn't that the episode two was bad. Mm-hmm. It was slow for a reason. It was sitting there for a reason. It was, what is it like to be in a jail executed very well. It was just a different pace. And my expectations were off, which we talk all the time about. Expectations will just ruin you on things.
And the flip side of that is Stranger Things, because I did the same thing you did. Mm-hmm. I've watched it a day and a half, which I don't usually do, but I just couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it had not been up to me, if I had had to wait a week between each episode, if some of those mysteries and the speculation would have really heightened the way, say, Lost did, or mm-hmm. some of those, because you could burn through and be like, oh, I know the answers.
Yep, absolutely. I think so. I mean, I think that's why, and people can differ an opinion on this. We all do. But I think the shows that I love the most are those shows that I lived with for 7 years. Yeah. I mean, I lived with Buffy for 7 years. When, spoiler for anyone listening that hasn't watched Buffy, when Angel dies, like, he's gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. And then you wait all summer. And he's gone. And that's, I mean, the only thing that I remember is the summer after Buffy dies is they announced that it was then moving to UPN and that she was hooked on for two more seasons. So you're like, okay, well, obviously that's not how it's ending. But it is that sort of thing of, I lived with that show for 7 years, and West Wing and The Office and all these shows, like Friends, 10 years. I mean, these were shows that week to week. So they're always in your mind. When you binge a show or you watch it really fast, you think about it, and it doesn't mean it's not as good, but you think about it. You maybe think about it for the next week, mm-hmm. maybe even 2 weeks. You're talking about it with people, and then it's gone. But if you're having to think about a show all week, waiting to see what happens the next week, it just lives with you in a different way.
Well, I don't disagree. And like, we do, I mean, again, she doesn't binge. She doesn't do well with it. I kind of do both, and I don't differ in opinion that like the shows I watched as a kid where I didn't really have an option. Like, I remember what happened in season 3 of something. Whereas if I watched The Shield all last summer, I don't know the difference between season 3 and season 5.
Right.
I mean, unless somebody goes, Glenn Close, Forrest Whitaker, like, when did this happen? Like, I know that finale really well. I know the feeling, the overarching feeling of Shane or Vic, mm-hmm. but I don't necessarily know the like ins and outs of it, because like, it was a big gulp of it versus like having to live with it. Like, I totally think that things sear themselves or like last with you longer if you spread them out and think about them and then the other way.
And week to week analyze it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. You're reading everything you can online in between the episodes, trying to figure out what people's speculations are, what you missed, what happened, all those things.
I mean, we definitely believe on the Netflix model, Emma's talked about this before with the binging, and this is more your preference of like, when House of Cards would come out, like if she didn't get to it within a month, like she never got to it because like the conversation was over. So there wasn't really a pressure to catch up or to.
So I'd wait a couple of years and then I'd be like, okay, now I can watch it.
Yeah.
Because now I can watch it. I'm not trying to race to keep up with everyone else. I can just watch it my own time.
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes the conversation will start again when a new season comes out.
Right. Absolutely.
Like, that's when I'll do. I'm way behind my House of Cards, and it's one of those things where I know when the next season hits, maybe then I'll go back in and, mm-hmm. and dive through a few months ahead. Eventually, that's one of the things that I really like about ATX Fest is that it makes me aware of shows I wasn't previously aware of, or even shows that I sort of maybe soured on or wasn't sure I wanted to watch again. But like when I saw Bo Willimon talking and moderating that panel between Fontana, and I'm like,
Simon.
This is a guy who knows TV.
Yes.
And I've got to see what he's doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it makes me want to go and watch House of Cards, even though the first season I was like, okay, I like that, but I think I'm done.
Yeah.
And so it made me think, okay, I want to know what that guy's doing.
Well, and that's really, I mean, when we talk to people that are coming to the festival, especially if a network is sending a show, it's really big for us to say, especially for the producers or writers, for them to sit on other panels, mm-hmm. because you might not go to
the House of Cards
screening. But if you see Bo on a different panel and are kind of intrigued by him or think that he has something interesting to say, then you might check it out.
Right.
And so if someone comes with a show, it's so important for them to sit on 2 or 3 panels. So when they're talking about different things, they're getting different experiences at the panel, but they're also reaching audiences that they wouldn't have, because it's really just fans of the show that are coming to the screening.
Right.
So now you're getting fans that are talking about a different topic that you might not even associate mm-hmm. with the show.
Right. I mean, there are definitely fanatical fans who would go to, say, a Supernatural con. And you're reaching all those people, but you're going to get people who come to this show who've never seen Supernatural, who mostly watch like NCIS. And mm-hmm. That was one of the things that really struck me talking to fans, is that there are people who love TV at the same level of, like, you know, 150% as I do, but we watch none of the same
right.
shows.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that, oh, this is not endemic to this show or this right. type of show. Mm-hmm. It's the medium.
Yeah.
And you can really get enthusiasm from community.
We've talked a lot about, like, in our programming specifically, since we're not genre specific or, like, even time specific, it's not all premieres or things like that, that we could never guess a person's show. Like, if you told me where they're from, gender, age, like, and you think, oh, that means that they watch Justified. Nope, they watch Gilmore Girls. Like, you, like, literally, we skew a little bit more female. Like, we're 60%+ female. But, like, this year we had The West Wing and The Shield and the Westerns panel and Tom Fontana and David Simon. Like, things that people might deem more masculine programming, and yet they were all the same viewers. Yeah.
You don't need to, because we pitch it constantly, but can you pitch the festival for our listeners? Why should they come to APX Fest?
Emily, go.
Pressure is on. You should come if you love television, and because you love television, and really just to meet people. It is TV camp. We don't get to, as adults, we don't get to go to summer camp or have a community like we did as children. And this is really a community for you to come to and meet people that have your same likes and meet people from all sorts, and then also talk to your favorite showrunners and creators your favorite shows.
And not stand in line to take a picture.
This is a time to just hang out. It's very chill, although it's very hot. Very chill environment in the heat. And it really is. I mean, it's about having fun. And even though we do have panels about serious issues, we also have panels about for the fans, and things that are fun and lighthearted, and it's all, I mean, it's television, it's entertainment.
It's a celebration.
It is a celebration of TV.
There you go.
Caitlin and Emily, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
TV News out.
TV News out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.